Good morning, cricket fans, and welcome to the Catch It podcast.
Oh, what a catch!
I'm Andrew Lush, and I started this podcast to have some interesting and insightful conversations about analytics and the stats behind the action, and to develop myself as a presenter.
Good!
Oh, actually, oh, brilliant!
I hope you enjoy our discussions and debates.
That is an absolutely outstanding catch.
On this episode of the Catch It podcast, I'm joined by Sarab Walker. Sarab is an incredibly experienced cricket analyst who has worked in the IPL, the 100, various other franchise competitions, and in international cricket. We discuss everything cricket analytics and his journey in the world of professional cricket in this episode, as well as some personal stories from his time in cricket. If you enjoy this episode, please give it a like and a follow on any platform that you listen or watch it on YouTube, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Thank you in advance, and here's my conversation with Sarab. Okay, Sarab Walker, welcome to the Catch It podcast. How are you doing? It looks like a nice day in Delhi.
Yeah, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me here, Andrew. Just busy with WPL currently.
Absolutely. You've just flown out from Bangalore. Was it a good, and it's obviously a complicated tournament. It's a busy schedule. Are you happy to be in a new city and potentially a new ground to kind of face the challenges of that?
Yeah. I mean, after the results, what we had for first four games and then coming here in Delhi and winning that first game and getting 2 points on the board. So I think I'm more happy here.
It's nice to change of venue and hopefully a change of forecast for you. You've been everywhere in terms of analytics and franchise gigs. You've been in the CPL, you've been in the IPL, you've been in the PSL, you've done various different international gigs as well. What would you say today is your proudest achievement?
I think the achievement wise, if I say being a part of the New Zealand team during the World Cup. So I think that was a thing which I had never been a part of any team in a World Cup competitions. I've been a lot of franchise cricket, but working in a different setup with a team like New Zealand was definitely a proud moment.
Absolutely, exactly. We'll get on to the World Cup in a fair while. We've got a couple of different topics that I'd love to chat to you about. In terms of going back, your early years, you grew up in Mumbai, as we chatted up about before. The town of Tendulkar, the town of various different Indian incredible stars. Who was your icon in terms of cricket growing up?
So growing up, so I'm born in 1985. So growing up and watching Sachin Tendulkar, that's how I started liking cricket. I used to miss out on my school days to watch him play. So that's the only motivation. That's the only motivation I had to watch a game of cricket. I was only following Sachin. Even now I'm mad for Sachin. Even if his past innings are playing on a screen, I just keep on watching that.
I think it's just he's an iconic cricketer to follow, and the whole of India, not just Mumbai, kind of have followed his journey, and he's always an icon and godlike status at the moment. When you were getting into cricket, and then what level did you play to? Were you ever playing at state level in terms of your personal journey with playing in cricket?
I've not been into like a state cricket player, but I've played for like college games, or if you look at or if you speak about the club games in Mumbai. But it was more of my passion and love for the game which kept me involved in cricket. And I was doing engineering at that time, so I thought if engineering, some mathematics and a cricket which can keep me involved in my future. So that's how I thought of getting into analysis.
That's brilliant. So you studied engineering in Mumbai growing up. What brought you back into analysis in terms of, did you think you have had a very set path being an engineer? Was there a trigger moment that in terms of thought, I can combine these two passions and move into a cricket space?
So going forward, I wasn't aware of this field of what analyst and that analysis is part. I used to go as a net bowler at Cricket Club of India, where all the overseas players used to come. So I used to bowl in the nets. So there I saw a SX team came with the analyst, and he was recording all the actions happening in the nets, then watching it in software. So that somehow, you know, that attracted me. I went to him and I asked him, what are you doing here? I mean, how it is helping the cricketers? Then he showed me how the software and the analyst part is involved in a game of cricket at the early stage. I'm talking about 2004 and 2005. Then somehow I told him, whenever you come here next, get me as an assistant so I can help you out. I want to get into this. I'm doing an engineering, but I don't see my future in engineering. I want to do something in cricket. So I think this is somehow somewhere I can see myself doing in future years. So that moment, I thought, you know, this is some stream which I can work on maybe work in this stream.
That's class. Do you remember what was the name of that analyst?
So he was an Indian analyst, Venky. And Dhananjay, they're from Chennai, but they used to travel from Chennai for the overseas team. So I spoke with them. Then I went to Chennai, trained for a year, got into this, came back to Mumbai, and luckily I got a offer from a domestic team, Mumbai Ranji Trophy team. So started working there.
So you've worked for the domestic Mumbai state team for about 10 years, is that right? How has that kind of relationship grown in terms of you're looking at has that helped in terms of your scouting and in terms of developing players to step up to the next level?
So growing up in school, I used to follow a lot of Ranji Trophy games, especially Mumbai games. And in those days, games never used to be televised. So it is only you see next day in the newspaper, what is the score, who did well. And I've been a fan of a Mumbai Ranji Trophy team. Even now they are playing finals starting on 10th. So I still follow them. You can call it, I'm a fan of a one sports team, that is a Mumbai domestic Ranji Trophy team. When I got a call from Mumbai Cricket Association to represent team in terms of analysis, I was pretty excited and I was pretty nervous too, because the players which I saw, or I saw their names in the newspaper or I saw them on the TV, I'm watching them first time, and sitting with them was a pretty nervous time for me.
How did you go from that phase of looking at these players as human beings and you could aid them in their cricket development and their cricket strategy, from them being these incredible stars that you'd see in the newspaper and you'd read about? How did you manage those expectations and those nerves for yourself?
At the start, analysis was not more about much about making strategies when I started. It was more of data collection. So the use of analyst back those time was like to get the videos, to get the data, just collect wagon wheels, collect pitch maps, and present it to the players. So it is not more, because we didn't have that much of data to make strategies. So it was more of you watch the videos, and as per the videos, the coaches are there to see those videos, and they used to analyze that part and make strategies.
Yeah.
So back in those days, the job of analyst was more of data collection. But as it went on to few years, it went off strategizing, analyzing. That has become the important part.
Now let's go into your life and working in the IPL. How competitive is it to get into the IPL as a data analyst? And why do you think you made it personally?
I think it's more about how you keep the things simple. In terms of IPL, yes, it is a numbers game. Everything is like right from the auction, right from the strategy. It is all about the numbers. But the more you keep it simple and you present those numbers and data in a simple format to the coaches or to the management, that really matters. Rather than putting 15, 20 pages of presentations, rather you try and keep it short and give them a solution what it is needed practically, because it's more about how you combine real game time situations and the numbers, and then how you put it across together.
It's interesting in terms of making sure that you're consuming everything and you're looking at all the analysis, but being that filter for players and coaches so they don't have to get worked up by the numbers or complicated by the numbers, because they've still got to go out and focus. So it's getting those little kind of pass away, those little moments of like strategy or planning or game decision that can be informed by numbers. When you're looking, how long does it take you to plan and strategize for an IPL auction?
For IPL auction, it takes a bit of a time, because it starts from your domestic cricket season. So you have to look at all the domestic games which is happening. For example, Syed Mushtaq Ali here in India, which is a T20 domestic competition where you have to follow the games. It's not more on looking at the scores or stats. It is more about the game situations and keeping a track of a player's, even if that player is playing three balls or four balls, and what impact he's having on those deliveries. So that's more of a scouting rather than who has scored the most runs or who has got the most wickets. So these are the things I think which is really important when you do scouts at the domestic level. Even in terms of bowling, how are you reacting when you got hit for four? Or what's your how you're reacting after on a free hit ball? So I think those moments, it's very important to identify and scout them for the next stage.
It's interesting to look at all that data and work out in that game situation and what your team requires for a deaf hitter if they're performing that role down at the level below in that T20 competition.
Yeah, because it is more about supply and demand. What is the supply available in your domestic circuit? Maybe there are a lot of batters available who can play the anchor role in domestic circuit in India. So you know where to spend more and what to scout. And when it comes to international cricket, there's a demand of a left-arm seamers who can bowl 140, who can bring the ball back in. So that offers combinations which we normally look at. And though on those sort of a supply and demand, you take a call on scout.
Do you then do the same with international cricket? Because it's a little bit more available and a little bit easier to find. Then you can kind of quantify that into how you want to scout and how you want to hopefully line up auction picks for international players.
Yeah, I mean, if you know what wicket are you playing, like for example, if you're playing at seven games on a particular wicket, so what that wicket demands. So accordingly, you need to have your playing 11. Accordingly, you need to have those specification players, because some of the wickets might require couple of power hitters batting at five, six or seven, maybe three power hitters, but some of the wickets might require good power hitters at the top, some sort of a combination. So I think understanding that, looking at the past history or that venue record, you have your playing 11 lined up.
When you were breaking into the IPL in your first couple of seasons with the Rajasthan Royals, what was the atmosphere like in terms of, was there a kind of experience of this is new and this is going to go somewhere incredible? Or was it a bit of, we have no idea what's going to happen with this? This is a whole new adventure. This is a whole new situation. How did you feel in that scenario?
I mean, it was like a cricket fan going into a into a big setup where you go and see Shane Warne, Shane Watson.
You had a pack, those first couple of seasons, you had a packed team.
Yeah, so you don't know how to react after seeing them, and you are quite nervous. You don't know how to start conversation with Shane Warne. So when I saw him for the first time, like we were in South Africa, we were practicing at Cape Town, and he himself came to me and he introduced himself saying, "Hi, I'm Shane Warne." And you know, so that gave me a bit of confidence while speaking with him, because someone like him coming to me, giving me that confidence, keeping his hand on my shoulder, and asking me like, "What all have you have done, and what you can produce in the team, and then what is his requirement?" So I think he's the one who made me so comfortable in our first conversation.
Was he like that in terms of your reactions with him in the next couple of seasons? Because obviously he won the season, he won the first IPL with a team that, by if you looked at the other teams and how they were structured, and we know a lot about T20 cricket and how very different strategy is now to that first year. And he'd won that kind of as a player coach, and it was all kind of crazy situation. They spent the least in the auction, and they had ended up winning the comp. What was what was your relationship like in those kind of following seasons, and how did he work with you and around the group?
I think he was not much into analysis. He has his own idea. He has his own plans, and he used to be ahead of the game. My role with the team was not much into providing him a lot of data or analysis or any numbers. He never asked me anything about numbers or stats or any matchups.
Wasn't the biggest stats guys.
Yeah. So he has his own idea. He has his own plans. The only role I was doing in team meetings was like collecting good moments from the game, putting it together, putting it good music, having that positive environment in a team meeting, you know, or showing positive stuff to the stuff to Warne, and then Warne used to speak about that rather than showing about the numbers or stats. He was ahead of the game. He was completely ahead of the game. He doesn't require any analysis or numbers, I feel.
An icon, I think it's not as much talked about how iconic Shane Warne was in those first couple of years in the IPL, because he brought a lot of star power to the IPL in the first couple of years, and he's at the start of that T20 generation, and probably the end of his career is at that T20 like opening day, that kind of golden era that kind of landed with the IPL exploding. Do you think it's sometimes missed how iconic he was in the formation of the IPL?
Yeah, I mean, if I tell you, like, you know, growing up, being a fan of Sachin Tendulkar, you know, there is to a battle against like Sachin and Warne, Sachin and McGrath. And I never used to like Warne. Like, no, because there's always been a battle against Sachin. Yeah. So as you said, you know, so that was the thing. So when I met him, spent some time at good conversations. And then we were playing against Mumbai Indians. And in the first game, he got Sachin dismissed, playing paddle scoop. And then he got him LBW. And I think in the entire dressing room, I was the happiest person. So imagine there's a star person like him changing all your mindset, you know, looking at him, because he was such a big impact on you. So I think that sort of personality he had. So imagine, so what sort of an impact will be having in whole team or on the competition when there is someone like Shane Warne participating.
How was it like working with younger players that have gone on since then and progressed and been icons, just like Shane Warne, a bit of a unknown? He'd been doing okay in international cricket, but then he went on and did really well in those first couple of seasons. What was it like working with an icon like him? I've said it wrong. I said Shane Warne, and I meant Shane Watson.
Okay. Yeah. So Watto, I mean, he wasn't available for the second season. So I just met him for a couple of days, 3 days. He spent some practice sessions with us, and then he had some commitments with Australia, but he came back in a third season. So he was he had his own plan, internationally experienced player. So that so those years they're not much into data, as I said in first few seasons. So it was more of data collection or watching the opposition videos. So my role was really simple. If he asked me about any of the opposition bowlers' footage, so I was only providing that So it was not much of used to be a conversation of what's your plan of action against such bowlers or what your plan of actions against such batters. So it was really a simple thing of getting data, showing the videos. Very simple stuff used to happen in IPL at the at the very beginning.
How has that changed to now, how you have conversations with players and coaches and captains?
I think now this is the era of matchups. So so while you are batting or bowling, it's matchups has been a talk of the town. So like so it's an analyst's job to find out what's happened in 2 years past 2 years data. What are the right matchups in power play for a right hand batter or for a left hand batter, or if you are for your batters, which is a right batter to target and try and get 10 and 15 runs. So on those terms, I think the analyst has role has been it's been important to find those numbers and provide it, providing that to your coaches and captain. So accordingly, I think it helps them to take a call on who will be bowling your first over or second over or who are the good options at the death. So so it's been evolving over the years, right from the data collection and now analyzing that data and providing your input to the team. So I think that the role of analyst has become very important at this moment.
How have you kind of structured, because you don't work with a big Indian data company, you work as, you've always described it to me, as an independent. How important is that for you to keep your kind of data structures independent, and what benefit and what kind of advantage do you think that gives you in the kind of competition with other maybe larger data companies in bidding for being a provider of data to an IPL or trying to forward their own analysts into an IPL franchise?
I think it's more of a game awareness, the more you experienced you get, you understand, some of you started understanding what is required at that moment. And the in terms of data, I'm working with CricWiz on a data part. So I get Hawkeye stuff from the CricWiz, which is I think the I would say a right exact or data which is required. It's not a manually coded stuff. And also I have a couple of guys back home whom I've trained, so they watched games and they record all the games and they give their inputs and then we watch games together, we discuss about the games and the whatever the input comes out of it, I try to put it in the analysis format. So I just try to keep things simple because sometimes you need to get a data of you need to see the data as well, like if some of the if we call it some of the batters numbers are very high against off spin, but you need to look at what sort of a bowler he has faced on what sort of a venues. So I think so that's why the cricketing conversation matters a lot when you rather than the what data is presenting. So most of the times after the games, it's having a conversation with my colleagues about the game. That's really matters. And I think upon that, I decide what my analysis or strategy going forward.
It's interesting to see that in the first couple of seasons, you were very much on your own, kind of having to work it all out yourself. But now you're working with a big company like CricViz. You have support staff to be able to take the load off some of your kind of data collection and data interpretation. And it's more of a discussion, would you say, with your team, like back home, and you can be the forward facing. I think in terms of data collection and data scientists, they always talk about the forward facing analysts and kind of the back room. Both are really important to the end product, but they're different roles.
So I think data we can present the way we want it. I mean, we have a data and we can present the way we want it, but it's more of understanding your opposition, more of understanding what wickets are you playing, and more of understanding what's your strength. I mean, if you have a data of fast bowlers bowling around 140 plus, but in your squad, which have a bowlers who are bowling 130. So still, so there is a big difference. So how do you analyze that stuff? And how do you make those plans, or how do you scout your meetings having your team strength compared to the data? So it's more of watching the videos again and again, and giving your inputs rather than banking more on data stuff.
It's making sure you have that interpretation and those conversations with the coaches as well as just the numbers.
Yeah, cause for example, in a scout meeting, if you put all the videos of dismissals against 140 plus bowlers, and all the bowlers are watching in a team room who are bowling 130, 135, so how do you scout that? So what is your strength? Understanding that strength, and then you speak about the scout. I think that's more important.
So example, if you put a whole load of videos of leg spinners taking wickets and you don't actually have a leg spinner, it doesn't make too much sense. So you have to have that cricket knowledge and cricket interpretation.
But again, there are more of leg spin data available, but there are no left arm spinners data available, not available. So how do you, but you have left arm spinners in your team. So how do you analyze that? So that's more of, watching a bit of videos or understanding the way he's playing, and then having a conversation with your colleagues. That really matters in terms of analysis.
When working with the international teams that you have worked with, how have you got that role? We'll focus on the New Zealand role, as that was one of your pinnacle moments of your career. How did you get that role? And what was it like working in a home World Cup as well, in your home country for New Zealand?
It is an experience of lifetime. I wasn't expecting that call, but I think Black Caps were looking for an analyst from India during that season for the World Cup, because it was happening in India. And I think Simon Inslee, the cricket director of Black Caps, I think he spoke with Simon Katich about, and do you know any analyst who's from India, who's experienced, or he was looking for that sort of a guy to work with. So I think it came from Simon Katich, and he put my name forward, and then Simon contacted me. I had an interview. I was in Japan that time, and he set up a call, and that interview was like pretty short and sweet. He asked me how I do scout meetings, how I gather data, how I speak about bowling meetings, batting meetings, how I look into their numbers. It went for like 15-20 minutes, and then I got a confirmation after a week or something, like if you are available, if you can join after the 100 ball, because they were playing against England in England. So I joined them straight away after 100 ball final.
A busy summer for you. I remember you us talking through, and the 100 is just as busy as any tournament, and it is manic and exciting. So you were you were literally traveling down the road to join up with New Zealand. Had you worked with a number of the players and support staff through various connections in other leagues and the IPL?
You're talking about the Black Cap staff, which I worked.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that was my first experience with all the staff. Gary Stead, the head coach, or Shane Jurgensen, the bowling coach, Luke Ronke, batting coach. I mean, that was my first time I was working with them. But I think before joining them here in England, they were playing in UAE, and we had a Skype call over the scouts when they were playing against UAE, and what they wanted in terms of scout meetings. So we were on the like same page, what sort of a data they required and what sort of a planning they required. So before joining them, I was providing them that stuff. So it's more of a good communication from the staff side, what they required, and I was able to provide them, and somehow we were on the same page, and we worked well together.
And what was it like in terms of on a game by game basis, in terms of what was your role in the dressing room? obviously you've moved, you have your own team behind and you get the QuickFizz data, so you're not necessarily coding at a game. What was your role during a game?
So my role during the game was, we used to get pitch maps, we used to get wagon wheels, we used to get a match upgrade on a QuickFizz stuff. So I think that was more insightful. Used to get the live pitch information, which is really important, I feel. So how the wicket is changing, whether in terms of bounce or in terms of spin deviation, or whether it is gripping or no. So that sort of information you get on a QuickFizz setup. So that was really important to pass on the message to the coaching staff.
Do you think these days it's making sure that in-game scenarios you're able to quickly process that data and just, it's just a couple of it's a sentence, it's a word, yes, it's spinning, opposition bowler, he's seaming it around a bit, he started using his variations. Do you think that's where the real power of an analyst in an in-game scenario is?
Yeah. I think this is in terms of how your relation is with your coaches and what sort of information they want during the game. Because some of the coaches may not prefer, some of the coaches might prefer. So it is more of what your coaches require. And yes, I mean, whatever is happening, you see a couple of hours and then you give your opinion about how the wicket is behaving, whether it is seaming or whether it is gripping, whether it is staying low. So I think it's more of, I think it is important to have that conversation during the game. So I think, yes, I do provide such information to the staff.
But it depends what coach relationship is there. So for example, your New Zealand coach versus Simon Cattage will have a very different requirement in that in-game scenario.
Yeah, I think in terms of requirement, Cattage, I worked with him during more of like 100 ball, more of a shorter format where compared to a 50 over game. I think both of the coaches, the stuff which they ask the analyst, it is quite similar in terms of matchups or in terms of wickets. I'll tell you one example where how we have our scout meetings for 100 ball. It's more of around the pitch. We look at the pitch map of a previous games or past 2 years. What lengths have been worked on those wickets, or what sort of a bowlers have worked on those wickets, or what sort of a variations have worked on those wickets. So we have communication around that stuff.
Who do you think is the most interested coach in data, and who has asked for the most data from your experience in working with different coaches?
Andy Flower, when I was working, Andy Flower has been more keen on data and numbers. So because before the game, we used to have a staff meeting, and in that staff meeting, my job is to provide numbers of all the opposition and our batters, our bowlers, what is the right matchup, especially phases wise, what is the mode of dismissals, if someone is bowling, what are his catch maps. So I think, if you're playing an evening game, there's a meeting in the morning where I have to be prepared with all the numbers and giving him heads up. This might happen, this may not happen.
Moving on to, you've worked in various different leagues around the world. Which is your favourite one been? I think we can cancel out the IPL. Obviously, that is a once in a lifetime and a boyhood dream from a little boy growing up in Mumbai. The IPL is obviously going to be up there. Out of the other leagues, which has been your favorite to work in?
I love being a part of 100 ball team Manchester. I love that environment. I love that competition. It is full house. There's a music, there's a buzz around. It is always pack house. That competition is also different rules, different challenges. So I love that comp. I love being in Manchester for 100 ball.
Oh, we love having you in Manchester, man. So it'll be exciting to join up in when we all kick off again this year. About your role with the Gujarat Giants in the WPL, you've been in that role for 2 years. How have you seen the development of women's domestic cricket in India? Do you think the scope for the WPL and your team is just going to go higher and higher with stuff like home games and stuff like being able to travel away? Because at the moment, it's just in two venues. Do you think that is only going to grow and grow and grow?
So I think in the first season it was only a one venue which it happened in Mumbai just to gather a crowd, and this season it's been a two venues. One is Bangalore and Delhi, and it is expected to have a home and away system next year. So right. I think it is more of a trial based competition going on here, and I think in 3 or 4 years' time it will be a really big hit in terms of compared to IPL. And I think this is very important league, I feel, for the Indian women's players, where they can learn from the overseas. It will have a similar effect what IPL had 12 years back or 13 years back, and you will see a difference in Indian cricket in next couple of years.
Because that's the thing in terms, because the women's cricket. Do you think India was a little bit late to the party in terms of making sure it established a franchise competition? It obviously had the I think it was called the T20 Challenge before the women's IPL, but do you think obviously this won't affect your the scouting of your Vermas, your Harmanpreet Kaurs, your Jemima Rodriguez? It won't affect that kind of talent to rise to the top, but do you think that layer underneath it, Australia and England, are just a little bit ahead in terms of that domestic talent?
Yeah, I mean, if you compare the talent of domestic players, yes, Australia, England, New Zealand, or South Africa, they're quite ahead in terms of India's domestic players. But I see in a couple of years, this competition giving them more confidence, more opportunity, and where it will help them to get better. And as I mentioned before, if you look at 2009-8-10 season, look at the Indian domestic players back then, and if you now look at the Indian domestic players, is a 360 difference altogether. So I think in a few years' time, we'll see the same difference in women's cricket as well.
And that's exciting, obviously, to see those younger players coming through and to be able to share a dressing room with your Laura Wolfarts, with your Beth Moonies, with your Ash Gardners in your setup. Are you excited to see that progress and see your scouting networks kind of develop in Gujarat to bring in some kind of homegrown talent?
Yeah. So like in IPL or WPL, there are scouts appointed by the franchise whose job is to watch the games throughout the season, whether it is domestic cricket happening, whether it is a red ball cricket or white ball cricket, and keep a track of a players and submit that report back to the franchise. And then all the management, they take a call when the auction is around, having that data or having that scout report, because sometimes you may not get data of a domestic games because there are not much of analysis software has been used for the domestic games, or there are not much of video footage is available for the women's cricket. It's more of a scouts going and watching those games and giving their own report. And on those reports, we take a call during the auction.
So in that sense, the auction is quite, you have to prepare quite differently to the WPL auction in terms of you need to assess the quantitative analysis, the data, and how reliable it is from those lower levels, and also the more subjective information from the scouts. What was it like working in that first WPL auction when you've got a clean slate? I know you worked with the Lucknow Supergiants, so you had a bit of that experience of starting a franchise from afresh. What was it like with the Gujarat Giants, and how was that handled in terms of how you built your squad? And what were you really looking to go out for and get in that first WPL auction?
I think it is more about, as I said, about supply and demand. What sort of players are available in domestic circuit and what's not available here in domestic circuit. So you try to get those players from overseas. So if you look at our auction strategy, it is Beth Mooney, get a good leader who can keep wickets and open the innings. So you get three dimensions, like three skills from one player. Then if you look at Ash Gardner, number one all-rounder, bowls in power play, bowls in death, bats at 5 or 6, big hitter. So similar sort of a skill players are still not available in India in a large number. So you try to get those quality players from overseas, and then you try to fill in gaps with the domestic players.
And that's the important thing of seeing what's out there in the auction and how you want to work with that. Have there been any times that you've been, obviously, because the auction has that strategy, have there been any times that you've been looking over at other analysts and saying, yeah, we're bidding on this, just player, just to make sure that you bid to the right maximum. And we know we don't really want this player, but we know you really want or need this player. So we're going to bid that way up. Are there any kind of sneaky little smiles across different auction tables?
Yeah, it depends on a situation. I mean, you don't want to do that at the start of the auction, because even sometimes you may end up getting that player which you don't want, and you end up spending more, and then that might affect your own strategy. So when you get your right balance, when you are done with your 10 or 11 players, and then you can think of, you know, some of the teams getting that player for a higher price. But I think auction is more about focusing on your team and, you know, building your playing 11. It doesn't matter how much you pay for one player. It doesn't really matter, as long as you make your player playing 11 combination perfect.
Were there discussions in the WPL and the IPL? Can those meetings get pretty feisty in terms of who people want, who people have their own personal preferences? And is that good to have that discussion and debate and then to finalize on your strategy?
Yeah, it's so in a team, it's good to have a different opinion. So when you have a different opinion, then you have a conversations. And then in terms of conversation, then the data requires, then the analysis is required, will be more effective in terms of analysis. Because the people around you, they all want your team to be like, you know, a good team combination. So the intentions are really good of all the players, of all the staff sitting in a room. When it comes to selecting A or B, then the numbers comes into play. And then those numbers are very important to get the best player in your team.
That's interesting to see where your dynamics of your team structure. And in terms of it's being in those meetings and remembering that your coach staff, your support staff, your scouts all want that big outcome and all want you to succeed. So in terms of if someone doesn't listen to your numbers, or if someone does listen to your numbers, you all want the same outcome and you all want the same goal. It's very important. Yeah. We think it's always important to remember that.
Yeah, it's very important to understand what is best combination, because you know, everyone in your room, they want the best. And then it comes to how your relation with all the members and how the communication goes, or how the conversation goes around that one player. And then whatever the outcome comes, everyone agrees to that.
What would you say your goals for the future of? You've got a brilliant family that came over. I was looking down your Instagram today and I saw some really cute photos of your little son. Or it is your son, isn't it?
Yeah, 2 years.
Yeah, your little son having photos with Laurie Evans and Joss Butler. It's very, very sweet. How fun was it to have him over? And what are your kind of goals for the future in terms of what would you like to accomplish in the next couple of years?
I'm not so much thinking ahead, because right now what I'm thinking of day by day, what I need to do, I need to do to get better in terms of analysis, or in terms of being a better analyst in future. So as long as I'm enjoying working with the teams, I'm happy with the things which are going right now. So in terms of goals, I'm not so much thinking ahead. As long as I'm enjoying this working with the teams, different teams, I'm happy with that. And my family, I mean, they love to travel. I mean, wherever I'm traveling for the games, they come over for a small patch and they spend time with us and all the cricket players, which they also enjoy. So loving it.
Yeah, it's brilliant to create those memories that your son will be able to look back on and think, wow, my dad invited me into this, got me into this dressing room.
After a few years time, when he turns out like 5 or 6, and then he realized, okay, he was in that dressing room. Imagine watching a match at Lord's, 100 ball final, getting into a dressing room at Oval after winning that semi-final. So he may not be aware right now. Is sitting with Josh Butler or Laurie Evans or Gleason, but when he when he'll turn out five, he'll realize that good memories for him.
That's
so I'm
brilliant.
Just trying to give him those best memories which I can, possibly. So trying to keep things
simple and keep things in the moment. Yeah. I think that's brilliant advice for any analyst, because I think we have a tendency sometimes to overthink and over-strategize. Yeah. It's in our blood, but I think that's a really good message just to close on in terms of keeping your work as simple as possible and thinking about day by day how you can improve.
Yeah, because I feel if you go into scout meetings and you put all the members, all the numbers on the screen, and the players coming and they're still looking at the numbers, I think it gets more confusing. Rather, how you keep things simple and short. That is the role of analyst, I feel. And it's more of putting those numbers, matchups to the coaching staff rather than putting it to a player.
It's making sure that you know who you're talking to when you're presenting data. And in terms of if someone wants more complicated, you can give them more complicated. But the best rule of thumb, keep it simple, keep it direct, keep it to the point. And you're only going to succeed if you go by that. Well, thank you very much, Sirab, for joining us on the Catch It podcast today. It's been a really insightful discussion. And best of luck for the rest of the WPL. And I can't wait to have you back in Manchester for the 100 this year.
Thanks, Andrew. It's great to have me on your podcast. It's a pleasure. Thanks a lot, man.